surprised themselves with their near unanimous agreement that it should remain a stable, unchanging space. But every other part of the city was chaos, and the emotional geography of the city had been as variable as its street plan. Individual fetches experienced their rebirth in many different ways. The luckiest were heartily welcomed by their families and friends, immediately and unquestioningly understood to be a direct continuation of the lives that had so recently ended. The unluckiest were rejected completely. Most experienced something between the two. East and the Totality came together to launch a vast transmedia campaign designed to convince the humans of the solar system to treat the returned dead with kindness. But they were pushing against deep emotions. East, in particular, was shocked to find that her audience was not its reliably malleable self. The dead found that they had often had to fight very hard to win back the lives their living selves had once occupied. Many failed. Some chose true death, letting themselves dissolve back into the memory seas. Some retreated into perpetual hedonism. Others sought to escape their loss through mysticisms of one kind or another. Some just moved bitterly on. And the worst of the living started to push back, creating the blood and flesh group. And the blood and flesh group created the plague that had nearly destroyed the Fetch Communion. At the thought of that, Leela decided to drop out of memory and back into the present. Her media stream had moved on from the news. An episode of Hugo Fiss' chat show was just beginning, its unmistakable theme tune ringing out as the camera closed in on the little ventriloquist dummy and his guests. Leela smiled as she turned him off. She'd happily watch him for the rest of the afternoon, but then she'd get nothing done. The agonies of the past, agonies that, with Dieter's help, she'd overcome, made the present that little bit easier to deal with. She pulled up her mailbox and started going through her messages. Most were condolences. Those from her own friends expressed careful sympathy. A couple had hoped that she wouldn't have too much trouble finding somewhere new to live. Dieter's friends were much less guarded. After a cliched platitude or two, they usually expressed deep excitement about his future. "He's such a tech head," one enthused. "He lives and breathes that shit. He's gonna love being a fetch." She dealt with some of the more important messages, then dropped her attention back into the cafe, wondering about another coffee. But glancing round for the waiter, an alien presence caught her eye and she froze. There, at the other end of the room, sitting discreetly at a corner table, was a man she didn't know but did recognize. She blinked. Realizing that it wasn't his face that looked familiar, it was his sense of style. He was dressed like that strange man with the soft, buzzing voice she'd met in the hospital. A pressure man, she thought. The tasteful colors of his suit blended perfectly with his surroundings, but its antique cut stood out a mile. He saw that he'd been spotted and stood up, then started rapidly towards the door. "Stop!" Leela shouted, standing herself. "We need to talk!" The buzz of conversation died and all eyes were on her. The waiter materialized at her elbow. "Mademoiselle?" The pressure man was almost at the door. She went to follow him. A firm grip held her back. "The bill?" A white slip appeared on the table. She glanced at it, then waved distractedly, feeling an amount of money she could live off for a week vanish from her account. When she looked back, the door was closing. Shit. She pushed through the cafe as quickly as she could. Reaching the street outside, she sprinted to catch up with him. They were on a small, quiet road, leading up to a busier main thoroughfare. "Stop!" she called, but he ignored her. "Please!" The gun kiddies watched her go by, pretend weapons swiveling to track her. She wondered if she was somehow integrated into their game world. For a moment, she worried that all she was really doing was embarrassing herself by chasing down a complete stranger with a taste for retro fashion. But then she caught up with him and saw his face. His cold, good looks a perfect rhyme with those of the man in the hospital, and smelt the same powerful perfume again. "Please stop," she said, stepping in front of him. He looked down at her. his expression so frozen that he could be a mannequin, saying nothing. "You work for Diodatus," said Leela. "You've done business with my brother." There was no response. "I need to know what's going on." The man's silence was unnerving. "I mean, all this money. I need to know where it came from, what it really means, what you want from him in return." Her target stepped past her and set off again. Leela sighed. Perhaps she was just embarrassing herself. But he hadn't denied anything, and he was such a perfect match with the man from the hospital. A moment and she caught him again, just as he was about to turn a corner into a main street, taking his arm as firmly as the waiter had taken hers. He was fully weave-enabled, and so he felt her grip and turned to face her. "I'm a fetch. I can follow you anywhere. If I have to, I'll jump to keep up with you." She hoped he wouldn't call her bluff. "I won't let you just walk away. Please, talk to me." The antique cut of his suit triggered memories. She flicked through entire catalogues of clothes like that when she was little, fascinated by the adult sophistication they projected. Remembering that made her feel awkward, like a child lost in an adult world. She decided to go on the offensive. "You were watching me in the cafe, and when you saw that I'd spotted you, you fled. If you're following me like that, well, something's up." Adrenaline coursed through her. She felt her skull face shift in the back of her mind, a weapon woken by her excitement and worry. "I need to know what Diodatus is. What's my brother got us into?" He leant forward and opened his mouth. His lips moved, but there was barely any sound, just a soft, distant buzzing. "Oh, God," she thought to herself. "Perhaps he was handicapped. What if he really had nothing to do with it all?" She leant forward, straining to hear him. Maybe she was the one who needed to apologize. His lips were still moving. A little closer, and there would be words. She thought of the buzzing voice of the pressure man she'd talked to in the hospital. This man reeked of scent, too. She took a step towards him, then another. His mouth-shaped sounds she could almost understand. "Who are you?" she asked. And then the pressure man started forwards and walked straight through her. "What the fuck?" she gasped. Now she was really annoyed. Station society might not hold fetches in very high regard, but one very important taboo was generally respected. You never knowingly passed through the dead. Leela turned after him. "How dare you?" she began, her voice raised, so outraged that she didn't care who overheard her. But he disappeared round the corner into the main street. She followed him, expecting to catch up with him right away, not quite sure what she'd do when she did. And then she rounded the corner and stopped dead. "Oh," she breathed. The street reached out into the afternoon, bustling with people. And the pressure man was nowhere to be seen. There was a busker summoning images and music from some sort of keytar. A couple of children danced in front of him. A shopkeeper stood outside his crashed window display, swearing at it as it pulsed out error messages. A totality mind stepped round him, moving purposefully up the street. There was nobody else. And there were no doors near enough to vanish through or side alleys to disappear down. "Where have you gone?" She moved up the street, looking for him. But he'd completely disappeared. He couldn't have masked himself. The Rose forbade that kind of software. But there was no sign of him. She was still feeling rather puzzled when an urgent contact request from Ambrose pinged into her mind. She accepted, and all of a sudden there he was, a virtual presence floating right next to her. His eyes were full of care. "I'm afraid I've some very bad news," he told her. "Could you jump back to my office?" "It's the insurance. I knew it was all fake." She shook her head. "I've just had the strangest experience. I think I met another pressure man." "You can tell me about that later. And the insurance isn't fake. Dieter signed up to something very real. That's the problem. Please come back to my office." "You know I don't like jumping, Ambrose." "We need to talk, in private, as soon as possible." Fear gripped Leela. "Just tell me." Ambrose swallowed. I've been going through the terms and conditions of the policy, the small print. I'm not sure Dieter even read it. It's very bad news. If I can't keep the money, I can't keep the money. Leela thought of the coffin drives. Perhaps life there would be bearable. The money's not the problem. It's what Dieter promised Diodatus in return for it. Ambrose couldn't meet her eyes. He signed over his weave self, Leela. All the memory blocks that would go to build his fetch. Diodatus owns them all, forever. They've all already been stripped. And Diodatus has taken a lot of other content too. The software tools Dieter built, his research content, everything important. His legacy. Leela was profoundly shocked. He said he was going away, but just for a bit. Nothing like this. Gods, I thought he was raving. Diodatus owns him and has taken him. No. The world spun. Where is he now? I don't know, replied Ambrose, his voice soft and sad. I'll pay the money back, then they'll return him. I'm afraid the deal's irrevocable. Dieter's gone, Leela. Gone for good. Chapter 5. Cassiel apologized as she showed Leela into her office. Apparently, it's the only spare space we have. She was dressed in a black trouser suit, cut in a business-like but elegant style. She moved with deft economy, her manner giving a sense of brisk confidence. Her oval, featureless face and smooth, elegant hands glowed a soft purple. It's not ideal, but one makes do. The narrow, high-ceilinged office felt like a repurposed storage room. A single window, half covered with a slatted blind, let slanting lines of spine light through to fall against the rear wall. A fan hung from the ceiling. Two wireframe chairs sat by a battered desk. Leela imagined showing it to a property client. It would be a difficult sell. If this was where the totality had put Cassiel, she couldn't have much clout. Dead insects speckled the floor. Their tiny wings glistened as Cassiel kicked them out of sight. They told me they'd send a cleaner in, she told Leela. We're normally much more efficient than this. She gestured towards a chair. That's clean, at least. As Leela settled into her seat, touching the pendant at her neck for luck, the office's virtual elements activated. A calendar drifted above the table. A clock hung on the wall. A false window opened onto a view of Mars. That was it. But then, they were in a building that had once been one of Kingdom's main Docklands temples, but was now a totality work and living space. Such simplicity was to be expected. We're very low weave, said Cassiel. I hope that's not upsetting. It's how I prefer it. Unusual, but admirable. I do this myself, you know. What do you mean? I find ways of praising clients when I'm showing them around a property. Trying to sell them something to soften them up. Oh. Cassiel leant forward across the desk, palms pressed together, the tips of her fingers almost touching her face. Her whole posture projected focus. Very sharp. And why do you think I might be doing that? You want to ask about my brother. You want to know what I know. That's why we're here. No, I'm here because I need information from you. Cassiel laughed. Oh, do you? She asked. You're rather turning the tables, aren't you? I need you to tell me what my brother's mixed up in. You've just come into quite a bit of money. Cassiel's tone was archly amused. I found that, within the narrow confines of their personal interests, the rich are very demanding. It usually takes a little longer to kick in, though. I have to find out where my brother's gone, and then I'm going to bring him back. Leela was desperate. She felt exhausted. She spent the whole of the night before, searching for any trace of her brother's weave self. But Diodatus had done a remarkably thorough job. Her own memories of her brother remained. Her friends would remember him too. But that was it. There was nothing more substantial left. Nothing that could cohere into a new fetch. Leela had wept. By the time she'd recovered herself, dawn's merciless light was breaking in. She'd called up the flat's weave system and had them show her the jagged, three-dimensional hole that the removal of Dieter's weave self had left behind. "Fill it with black," she commanded. The hole became a mold, shaping a frozen bolt of dark lightning. She shrank the lightning bolt down so that it was the size of her little finger, called a black chain into being, attached the bolt to it, and hung it round her neck as a pendant. Then she left the empty flat and came out to meet Cassiel, the shape of her brother's past hanging hard against her chest. Along the way, she looked out for more pressure men, but there were none to be seen. "And why do you think I'll be able to help with that?" asked Cassiel. "You're the totality fraud investigator. You think there's something dodgy here too. Why else would you travel all the way here from totality space?"
"I wouldn't quite say I was a fraud investigator.
But I am trying to understand why Dieter's worth so much to Diodatus. And I share your interest in discovering where it's taken him. I won't be able to tell you anything helpful."
"I'll be the judge of that.
Answer my questions, then I'll see about helping you with yours." "I don't know anything, and you clearly do. Tell me what you know."
Cassiel looked directly at Leela. "Without reciprocity, we can't proceed." A silence hung between them, lasting for far longer than was comfortable. Cassiel could have been a statue. Loss ached in Leela. She imagined life without Dieter. At last she said,
"Fine, ask your questions."
"How you spend your money is your own concern," Cassiel told her. "But I'd recommend a charm school."
Then the interrogation began. The mind had Leela describe the events leading up to Dieter's death, his time in the hospital, the pressure men, the artifact that had first infected him. That led to his interest in dead technology.
"Archaeology obsessed him," said Leela. "Ambrose and Cormac, too. They met on the Purdue chat boards, but they dug a lot deeper than anyone else. They were fascinated by Station's past, with exploring on and off-weave sites, understanding them, bringing it all back to life. They called themselves the Lazarus Crew, until Cormac's accident."
"What happened?"
"It was all over the news. I think East wanted it to be a warning. Don't look back, only look forwards. It made Cormac look like such an idiot."
She sighed, remembering.
"He was never that. Just overconfident."
Then impatience overwhelmed her.
"All this is public record. You can look it up on Weave in a couple of seconds."
"I want to hear your version of it."
"This is a waste of time."
Cassiel gestured toward the door. "You're free to leave whenever you want."
"Gods!"
Leela was exasperated. "We're here to share," Cassiel told her. "Answer my questions, then I'll answer yours."
The mind left Leela feeling she had no choice, which she hated. "Cormac found some shitty old piece of tech somewhere in the tunnels under the wart. Brought it home, thought he'd neutralized it. Then it woke up, decided it was under attack and lashed out."
She paused for a moment, remembering grief.
"Couldn't get through his defenses, but it crawled into his wife and son through their weave links." It was so hard to say the words.
"And wiped every memory they had."
Leela expected a dismissive comment,
but Cassiel's voice was gentle.
"That must have been hard.
Our past make us who we are."
She paused.
"I'm very sorry."
Remembered grief filled Leela. "I don't need your sympathy," she said, snapping a little harder than she meant to as she pushed the pain back down.
"Just your help. I don't want to lose my brother too."
"Then help me," Cassiel replied, once again briskly professional. "What happened to Cormac after that?" A silence.
"Leela, I need to know." There's far more at stake here than your brother's life, important though that is.
Leela nerved herself.
He killed himself. I thought he'd choose a true death. But he came back as a fetch. Told Dieter and Ambrose he was going to go back to his family's favourite place, loop himself inside their happiest moment and stay there forever. Nobody knows where that was, so nobody knows where he is. I hope he's happy.
He's chosen his eternity, said Cassiel thoughtfully. Very few people can. She waited while Leela gathered herself. And what about your brother and Ambrose? Did they keep exploring?
Oh, they still went out. But it was never quite the same. Ambrose got pretty phobic about it all. Dieter was still keen, but insects started keeping a very close eye on him. And then the blood and flesh plague landed, and he had me to look after.
But he still retained his interest in the past? Leela nodded. That's very unusual. Pantheon subjects usually equate the historic with the obsolete.
Says the mind from the 10-year-old culture. Look, I've answered all your questions. When are you going to help me?
You should have more respect, Leela. Our culture is at least 3 times older than yours.
Leela snorted. It's not my culture. And your brother's interest in the past is one of the things that makes him unique.
The mind continued.
Perhaps that's what Diodatus was after. I really don't think Dieter's interest in all that dusty old crap is worth millions.
Then you're not thinking very clearly. Now, one last request. Please show me the artifact that attacked him.
Gods, that bloody thing.
Once we've inspected it, I will tell you what I can about Diodatus.
Leela sighed and summoned the memory. A 3-dimensional image of the box hung in the air between them, radiating malignity.
Cassiel leaned forwards, shoulders hunched, her soft, empty face hanging before it. Remarkable, she whispered, then reached out and set it slowly spinning. The wires spilling from it drifted forwards and backwards. Ruby gel bulged from casing cracks, glowing with a soft, inborn light. Dead technology, she said, brushing a hand across it. Let's see what it looked like when it was alive. The artifact shimmered and began to change.
What are you doing to it? Asked Leela.
Dynamic image filters. They're analyzing how it's degraded, looking to see how it might knit back together, seeing what it might have been. The artifact moved backwards through time, becoming a more complete version of itself. Ruby gel oozed back into it and vanished. Wires retracted. The cracks healed themselves. Jaggedness knitting together and vanishing. Grain emerged as the wood lightened. Gold poured itself across the strips of wood that divided each face. The image shook slightly. Graphics wrote themselves across the cube. Truly fascinating, said Cassiel. It doesn't match anything in my immediate memory. Despite herself, Leela was intrigued.
Dieter said there was chi branding on it, she told the mind.
Specialized knowledge. I'll request access to the relevant data cores. The device shuddered in and out of focus, with every leap back into definition looking more complete. One more shimmer, and there were jewels. Green, red, and blue shone brilliantly out at them.
Well, it's still a box, said Leela. Just a much nicer one.
The reconstruction program's working on the fine detail, replied Cassiel. It'll take a couple of minutes to tease it all out. Then we'll see what this much nicer box can tell us. She turned to Leela. Now, my part of the bargain.
Finally, said Leela. So, what can you tell me about Diodatus and the pressure men?
Not much, I'm afraid. Diodatus is a very secretive corporate entity.
Is that it?
Be patient and listen. You thought there was little point in my questions to you, but, she waved at the device, it's led us to this, something very concrete.
What matters is where Dieter's ended up and how I get him back, not that piece of junk.
Your brother couldn't have sold his weave self if he hadn't been dying. Perhaps someone set out to kill him. That makes this box the murder weapon, and puts it at the heart of the investigation. Leela was silent for a moment. Shit, she said, feeling an uncomfortable blend of embarrassment and shock. Ah, you agree. Now, where did your brother find the box?
Junkie Fee sent it to him.
A drug addict? And he trusted her enough to explore the box without running his own checks.
She's not a junkie, sighed Leela. She's junky. Collects junk, reconditions it, sells it on. She sent him quite a few artifacts over the years. He always says she's pretty good on security.
I see. And I'm sure I don't need to ask, but have you been in touch with this Fee? Confirmed that the box did in fact come from her?
She hasn't returned any of my calls.
And you didn't find that suspicious?
Some of my messages were pretty angry. And then Dieter died. I thought she was hiding from me.
I can imagine. The mind sounded amused. I will, of course, try to reach her myself, if you'd be kind enough to share her contact details. And do you have a physical address for her?
Dieter did.
A pause.
So, it's gone, with all the rest of him.
Oh, of course. Leela said nothing. I am sorry for your loss. To lose a life's worth of memories like that. Well, it's profoundly shocking. And I know that my questions are causing you pain, but I have to pursue my investigation.
It's not just your investigation, Cassiel. I've helped you. You've got to start helping me. You haven't told me anything about Diodatus. All I know is that you investigate fraud, so it's got to be dodgy. And that doesn't get me anywhere.
Cassiel grunted disapproval. That misunderstanding again, she said. I'm not a fraud investigator. How to explain it? She thought for a moment. In your terms, I suppose I'm an antibody.
Can you stop changing the subject and just answer the question? What do you know about Diodatus?
I am answering it, replied Cassiel. Our society is very different from yours. Understanding my role within it will help you understand everything else I'm about to tell you. Leela rolled her eyes. So, let me broaden your horizons a little, the mind continued. I'm a free-floating purification agent within the totality. Much like a white blood cell in a human bloodstream, I'm empowered to deep dive into any corporate structure, up to and including God-scale entities, then purge any flaws or weaknesses that could damage our wider society. If necessary, I can step outside our normal legal structures and test them to destruction, much like your Hugo Fist did with Harry Devlin and Kingdom. He's a great chat show host, but I've never really believed someone used him to kill a god. More sadness, softer this time, as she remembered Dieter rambling on about conspiracies and cover-ups. At least her own memories of her brother remained untouched. Oh. He and Jack Forster played the devil's role to perfection. They saw a weakness, purged it, and helped the totality replace it with something purer. They helped your people become more powerful. Cassiel ignored the jibe. And of course, if I encounter a truly honest, truly well-run corporate entity, there's no action I can take against it. But Diodatus has to be dodgy. So you can purge it. I believe I could, if I could find it. It exists wholly virtually, a ghost within the corporate machine. Most of the data cores that might have recorded its activities, its personnel, its locations, were destroyed during the Soft War. There is no mention of it in any that survived. All I can find is 3 recorded transactions,
all taking place within the last 2 months. The very substantial payment to your brother, and a pair of smaller but still significant ones to family members of two other recently deceased Pantheon subjects. In my experience, secrecy times riches equals corruption. And so, here I am, trying to understand that corruption, so I can protect my society by eradicating it.
So you don't even know where it's based?
No.
Shit. What about the pressure men?
This is the first I've heard of them. Clearly they represent Diodatus on station, and they seem to be pretty elusive. Beyond that, well, further research is needed.
And the people who got the other two payouts? Haven't they helped?
Cassiel's glow dimmed a little. When I'm in Pantheon space, I have to work through the Rose. Her people refuse to release any of the other beneficiaries or policyholders' details to me. Insects say there's no evidence of any crime. Frustration filled the mind's voice. All I need is their names. But the Rose has been so obstructive. I believe she's actively trying to limit my investigation. There's a possibility of corruption.
Leela thought back to her own encounters with Insec.
They'd always been so brutal.
That wouldn't surprise me, she said.
So, how did you find me?
Through the trust fund that holds the money on your behalf. It's a totality-based financial entity. I didn't need the Rose's help to find and question it.
And you've been very helpful in your way.
She indicated the artifact.
There's that. It fascinates me.
Aha!
The reconstruction is complete.
Leela was now also very intrigued by the artifact. She decided to try and ask Ambrose about it, regardless of his objections. But before she inspected it, there was one last thing to be sure of.
So, is that all you know about Diodatus?
As I said, it's a beginning, Cassiel leant in and examined the fully reconstructed image. And all investigations have to begin somewhere, though perhaps our true beginning is this box. I've queried the relevant data cores about it. I'll hear back from them all in a day or so.
Will you share those answers with me?
Cassiel tipped her head to one side and brought a hand up to her chin.
I don't know, she replied.
Maybe, maybe not. It depends. And perhaps Junkie Fee will reappear. I'm sure she won't hold anything back from you.
Leela thought about unanswered phone calls.
Perhaps, she said.
She remembered her new wealth.
I'll pay for information, she said. About the device, about Diodatus, about the pressure men, whatever it costs.
But I'm totality. Pantheon money means little to me. We're motivated by very different things. Mutual obligation. Social cohesion. The common good.
Taking care of your family? Protecting lost memories?
Ah, the mind said, sounding almost amused. Both good points. Very well, then. I'll see how things proceed. If I can help you without either disrupting my investigation or placing you in danger, then I will.
I think that means no.
It means maybe. And that's the best you're going to get.
There wasn't much else to say. They parted and Leela returned home, where she spent most of the rest of the day organizing Dieter's wake. It was slow, sad work. She was surprised to find herself wishing that she was back with Cassiel again, where she'd at least had some sense that she was pushing forwards rather than looking back. And of course, the next day was even worse, because then the wake actually happened.
Chapter 6. Dieter's wake was an unusually sad event, because most of the people attending it expected it to be a joyful one. It took place in his weave space, the virtual landscape that served as his workshop, personal comms hub and general on-weave home from home. Leela's friends, Miwa and Dave, had offered to support her. She'd asked them to wait at the weave space entrance and, as people's avatars appeared, take them to one side and break the news of his true death. Then the guests moved into its public area, a large grassy space surrounded by one- and two-story utility huts. Rectangular windows showed workspaces that had once been cluttered with Dieter's obsessions. Little of them remained. Diodatus had left only empty shelves, unused blackboards, and vacant tables and chairs. The guests dealt with the shock of Dieter's true death in different ways. Some pulled themselves out of the party to gather their emotions, then returned looking pale and controlled. Others came straight over the grass to Leela, shocked faces clashing with colourful party clothes. They stumbled out condolences they'd had no time to prepare, then moved on to drink too quickly. When she wasn't greeting new arrivals, Leela moved through the crowd, breaking awkwardly into conversations between people who knew each other far better than she did. She felt desperately lonely. Everything seemed so wrong. She rolled the black pendant that hung around her neck between her fingers, letting its sharp edges spike into them, and decided to take refuge in solitude. She stepped out of the public area of Dieter's weave space into one of his private workshops. There was a table at one end of the room, lit by sunlight pouring in through long, high windows. Flies buzzed lazily, full stops weaving through the air. Three empty blackboards clustered at one end of the room. Memory showed her the clutter that had once filled it. This was the room where they'd worked together to rebuild her memory. Dieter had built two linked couches for them to lie back in, as Leela restored structure to her past. They were gone. A child's voice surprised her.
I looked forward to his rebirth. He would have contributed so much more to the Fetch Communion.
Leela turned. A young boy stood in the doorway, dressed in red shorts and a blue t-shirt. He looked about 10. Uncombed hair leapt up from his head. His face was friendly and open, but his eyes were pools of shining darkness. When he spoke, the same deep void appeared behind his white teeth. Hello, said Leela. She'd never seen the boy before, but she recognized the entity that had possessed him. It's been a while.
A couple of years at least,
the Fetch Counselor used the boy to say.
We've all changed a lot.
Leela tried to remember what sort of body the counselor had been wearing when they'd last talked. It had no independent existence. Every time it appeared, it manifested through a different fetch. Only the eyes and the mouth remained the same. She spent a lot of time with it during the first months of her afterlife. It had worn many different bodies as she came to terms with her new post-mortal status. Whenever she remembered all those different faces and voices, she felt like an entire community had cared for her. She supposed that that was the point. She pulled herself back to the present. I'm surprised you came, she replied. But thank you. I'm very touched. The boy hopped up to sit on the table, moving with a confidence that was entirely adult.
I wouldn't have missed it, he replied. After he healed you, Dieter did a lot for us. Boosted our security, helped us guard against other attacks.
Leela's surprise must have been very obvious.
He never mentioned that?
No, not at all. I mean, he talked about how fascinating he found fetch memory structures, and he really hated those blood and flesh people, and any other fetch bigots come to that. But he never mentioned doing anything for you. The boy nodded.
He had a lot of respect for your choices. He did his best to protect you, but always within the limits you set. And when you chose to have nothing more to do with us, clearly he decided to respect that choice too.
His tone was difficult to read. Leela wasn't sure if he was chiding her.
I suppose he must have done, she replied.
Out on the lawn, more people had arrived.
I should get back out there, Leela said,
but she didn't move towards the door. There was a question she had to ask. Dieter seemed to think he was going to be reborn. Could Diodatus do that?
Are you sure you want me to answer that?
She nodded.
We're the only people who can create true fetches, and it's taken us centuries and a revolution to work out how to do it. If these Diodatus people have access to the right technology, they could probably create an approximate version of him. But it would be very incoherent. And it would chew up his weave self's memory structures. Could probably run for a month, maybe two, before it started doing irreversible damage. And of course, if they only want part of him, they can just delete the rest.
Shit. I've got to find him.
Of course, said the boy.
Then he took her hand and looked up at her. She remembered when they'd first sat together on the ocean shore, where she would talk herself back into life again.
I am so sorry, he said.
I'm going to bring his weave self back, said Leela. He will be reborn.
I hope so. For your sake as much as ours.
The little hands pulled lightly, and Leela sank to her knees. Small arms wrapped themselves tightly around her. Her face was pulled in against soft, curly hair. The little boy's grip was surprisingly strong, surprisingly comforting. The counselor had known her since her own rebirth. There was no need for any sort of facade. There was a whisper in her ear.
I'm speeding up time. Take as long as you want.
The room shimmered as the counselor overclocked their deep selves, creating a very perfect privacy. Leela let her grief take her. She sat with the counselor for several subjective hours. Sometimes she reminisced, sometimes she wept. Sometimes she was silent. As time passed, therapy slowly became conversation. Leela told the counselor about Cassiel's investigation. She showed him the reconstruction of the box.
Means very little to me, I'm afraid, the counselor said. The gods guard their history jealously. I don't have anything like the expertise your brother and his friends did.
It didn't come from Junkie Fee. She finally replied to one of my messages. She's been off station for the last few months, pretty much out of touch. Diodatus must have sent the box with a faked note from her.
But why? Dieter has an intimate knowledge of fetch consciousness structures and mechanics. Anyone wanting to harm us would find his memories a very useful weapon.
Shit. The thought disturbed her deeply.
Do you think all this is a blood and flesh thing? Have they got Dieter now? They are no longer a threat. And we monitor all of the other fetch hatred groups. None of them could have pulled this off. Although the dress style of the pressure men is suggestive. It could be that they're harking back to some sort of purer past. The second one you met didn't even speak to you?
Leela nodded.
Perhaps he refuses to speak to all fetches on principle.
Maybe Diodatus is a new hatred group, mused Leela.
But I can't imagine Dieter ever selling his weave self to someone like that, no matter how much they offered. Agreed. And Diodatus's financial resources and data hacking skills are far more substantial than anything we've seen in the anti-fetch world. As I understand it, the gods have accepted Dieter's mysterious insurance payout as fully legitimate.
And the other two as well, agreed Leela.
Even the Rose, although Cassiel doesn't trust her. There's definitely something dodgy about it. Theoretically, Dieter's been paying premiums for this insurance for years.
But I know he hasn't. The counselor looked thoughtful.
It's all so unlikely. Killing Dieter in such a targeted way. Then rewriting the past to make the payout seem legitimate. After doing the same thing to two other completely unrelated people. I can't imagine who it would benefit or how it would help them.
Leela shook her head.
I wish I knew. Then I'd use their own blood money to go right after them. There's that too. The payout gives you so much power to use against whoever's got Dieter. I just don't understand it.
Another pause. Then he spoke again, his tone more personal.
Look, I know how you feel about the coffin drives and the fetch communion. You have every right to reject us. We couldn't protect you and we couldn't rebuild you. But we're very worried by all this. We'd very much like to know how it happened and where your brother's been taken. We'd be very grateful if you could let us know if you or Cassiel find out anything of interest.
If I find him.
When I find him, it'll be for him and me, not for you. And I don't want to be anyone's spy. Can't you ask the Totality for updates yourself? We just need to know of any threats. And this situation, it's so difficult.
The counsellor suddenly seemed so fragile.
Leela wondered if he'd chosen a child's body with this moment in mind.
We're a new people, Leela. We're very exposed. We have to be very careful who we trust, who we tell we're in danger, and that includes the Totality.
Have you looked for him yourself? He sighed.
We can search the memory seas for stored weave selves, for fetches awaiting rebirth, even for those who've chosen true death. We've already looked there for Dieter, without success.
He sighed.
Please remember how vulnerable we are. Your brother's knowledge in the wrong hands could be very harmful. We need your help against that.
I'm sorry, Leela began.
We can't change the past. But we can try and make sure that others avoid the kind of pain you experienced.
That was a goal Dieter would approve of. I'll think about it, she said.
Please do,
replied the counsellor.
And of course, if you need any help, just ask.
They talked for a little longer, but there wasn't much left to say.
Leela walked to the window and looked out at the wake.
Insects hung in the air, glittering like jewels in the frozen light. The guests, too, were frozen. She looked around to see if there were any new arrivals. Ambrose stood by Miwa and Dave, one hand reaching out in awkward greeting.
Leela turned back to the counsellor.
We should go out again, she said.
And thank you for listening.
It's what I'm here for,
he told her. Time started again, and they were out into the garden together. Leela found it easier to mingle, easier to talk. At one point, she spotted someone wearing a pastel-shaded suit, standing alone. She started towards him, but was distracted for a moment by a tearful reminiscer. When she looked back again, he'd gone. Shit, she said. She sent a call to the Weave Space's security systems, but there was no record of him. He could have been a pressure man. Or he could have just been one of Dieter's more socially challenged acquaintances, moving as anonymously as possible through the world, fleeing when he saw that she'd spotted him. As the wake started to wind down, she felt more able to ask around. Dieter had never mentioned Diodatus or his agents to anyone. Nobody had anything useful to say about the box. When she ran out of people to ask questions, she ended up talking with Miwa, Dave, and Ambrose, breaking off for goodbyes when people started to leave as soon as they politely could. At last, it was just the four of them. Leela asked Ambrose to stay when the other two left.
I need your help, she told him. I know how much you hate this stuff, but I've got to find Dieter. And apart from Diodatus and the pressure men, the box is the only clue we've got. Please, could you take a look at it, just for a moment?
What about Junkie Fee? Asked Ambrose. She's the one that sent it to him. She should be helping you sort it out.
Leela smiled ruefully. No, she didn't. Turns out she's on a salvage contract somewhere out past Jupiter, has been for months. There's a 4-hour lag on any communication with her, and anything she says is heavily censored. Commercial confidentiality, apparently. I could hardly even talk about the weather with her. I'm sorry, Ambrose. It's you or nobody.
Gods, sighed Ambrose. There really is nobody else, is there?
I'm afraid not.
Ambrose bit his lip and looked away. Leela put her hand on his arm.
I'm sorry, she said gently. I wouldn't ask unless I really had to.
He looked back at her, doing his best to be resolute.
Okay, he said. I'll do what I can. Show me the box.
Thank you.
Leela sent an internal recall order, pulling up Cassiel's recreation of Dieter's box. It leapt into being between them.
Fuck!
Shouted Ambrose, throwing up an arm to shield himself. Then he became a statue. Silver leapt out across his skin and clothes, freezing him in place. His voice cut out. Leela put a hand out to touch him. He was rigid. The metal that had been his skin freezing cold to the touch. She snatched her hand away and glanced back at the box. Her systems told her that it was a completely inert, entirely harmless simulation. But there was nothing else that could have triggered his reaction. She pulled it back out of existence. A moment or so passed, then his shields dropped. The silver melted back into flesh and fabric. His face was the first part of him to reappear.
Bloody hell,
he said as he returned to normal. He staggered when the silver left his legs.
Dear me, Leela, that's an evil fucking thing.
I'm sorry, stammered Leela. I didn't know. I mean, I don't understand. It's just an image. What harm could it do?
The text on it.
There was a hip flask in his hand. He tried to unscrew the cap. His hand shook.
Triggered my shield.
How?
The precursor gods, the Pantheon's parent companies, from before Station was even built, were heavily reliant on psychoactive tech. Like the damn thing that killed Cormac's family. There was a lot like it about in the early days. It's one of the reasons why InSec are so down on archaeology. Why they keep the kind of thing we're interested in off-weave. People might find more of it.
You didn't mention this the other day.
Didn't seem relevant.
At last he unscrewed the cap. It dropped into the grass.
If any of the symbols that Cassiel's exposed had been visible on the real thing, InSec would have been all over you both.
He took a deep swig of whiskey.
So, what are they? Are they dangerous?
Not on their own. But they've been seen before. On old, old dark technologies. Artifacts that write commands directly to your mind. And so my shields went up.
He drew on the little flask again.
I haven't seen anything like that since the Lazarus crew days.
I never knew, said Leela.
We were very careful who we discussed it with, and Dieter was always so protective of you.
Yeah.
Leela remembered him glaring at lover after lover.
Typical big brother.
And to be honest, it is terrifying. It might even be why we lost Earth. There was a lot of it live down there. One theory is that something psychoactive got loose, deleted history and nearly broke the gods.
Leela's reply was instinctive. She'd had the story drummed into her so many times at school.
But we know what happened. The gods fought to free us from the war machines.
That's what they'd like you to think. Actually, they don't really know what went on. Memories wiped. They might be the good guys. They might be the bad guys. Who knows? So, they made up a story that makes them look good.
I knew they were full of it, but that takes the biscuit, she thought for a moment. So, you think something psychoactive ate Dieter?
No. That's what's odd. The deal he made is real. The money proves that. And there are pressure men running around, and a totality fraud investigator looking into it all. There's a lot more to this than just that box.
But it's where it all began, Leela sighed. Could you bear to have another look at it?
Ambrose went to stand. Leela reached down for him. His real age was suddenly visible in the slow, careful way he moved.
You're a good friend. Dieter was too, once.
He took a deep breath.
But I'll be honest. All of this scares the shit out of me. It's been years, and I still can't even bring myself to decommission my shields. I just want to leave the past alone.
You're all I have, Ambrose. Cassiel's doing her best, but I can't see the totality knowing much about deep pantheon history. Nobody knows as much about this stuff as you do. Please, Ambrose. For Dieter. For me.
Gods. Ambrose smiled weakly. I'll have nightmares for the next week, you know.
He took a deep breath, then nodded.
Right. Shields deactivated. Bring it up.
The box shimmered into being in front of them. Ambrose swallowed, then leant over to examine it. A minute or so passed. Then he said,
Poor Cormac. Would have loved this. I wonder if Dieter worked out how old it is.
As old as Station, he said, maybe older.
He was right. It's amazing that it survived.
He peered up at Leela.
If I wanted to get Dieter so excited that he'd drop his guard, this is definitely the sort of thing I'd choose.
He paused for a moment.
You know, Insect really should see this, he said thoughtfully.
Really?
We had a backdoor arrangement with them. If we ran into anything that looked too dangerous, we'd pass it straight over to their specialist. An Inspector Holt. He's probably still there.
Cassiel's tried Insec. They blocked her.
She thinks they might be corrupt. Ah, that's just pantheon and totality politics, said Ambrose dismissively. Insec will treat you very differently. First of all, you're not a mind. And secondly, they're on a big anti-fetch hatred drive just now. They'll be all over you. Probably turn it into a PR opportunity.
So, they're definitely the best people to go to.
For sure. Much better than me.
Ambrose looked profoundly relieved.
Holt has to open a formal investigation if there's even a hint of any psychoactive technology.
And then he'll have to start digging into Diodatus, checking out the pressure men and working out where Dieter's gone.
You're on to a winner.
Leela wanted to make sure she'd exhausted all avenues of inquiry.
Is there anything you could do alongside their investigation?
The only thing that could possibly help is my family firm's search